So at the moment, it's much reduced. And, you know, if you look at the statistics of international attacks, the falling off from 2015, 2016 to where we are now, particularly the years 2018, 19, and 20 have all been very, very low. And this is all to do with what I said earlier, which is the fact that ISIL actually gave up its external operational capability as part of its survival strategy. It was just trying to survive the blitz that it was facing militarily. And so that was regarded as surplus to requirements, and they focused in on their most essential functions. The problem for them is that what that has left them with is a very limited external capability. And that's why most of the attacks that you've seen recently have been things like knife attacks or vehicle attacks, and a lot of attacks or intended attacks which have failed. So the statistics are way down, but I think the key thing people need to bear in mind is that there is this impulse in ISIL that they know they have to reclaim the headlines. They know that they have been out of the headlines and that they're struggling for profile these days. They've also had a prolonged period during the pandemic with a sort of a captive audience, because of course a lot of what they're doing is online. A lot of it is recruitment, radicalization, instruction, fundraising, and things like that, which are done online. Now, if they've used that time well, then it's possible that when restrictions are eased, that we will actually see some attacks, which, as it were, have been bottled up, but sort of been planned during the period of the particular movement restrictions. So the threat is there, but the thing that I think what we have to bear in mind is that if they successfully regenerate their external operations capability and they are able to direct sophisticated attacks, then we might see things of a different order, which are more threatening. Things like threats to civil aviation, for example, as compared with the, you know, frightening and disruptive, but nevertheless relatively unsophisticated and low casualty attacks that we have generally seen.
What about recruiting? You've mentioned, you know, they've been online a lot. I know that the U.S. government has announced that it had shut down fairly sophisticated fundraising activities from both ISIS and Al-Qaeda recently. How are they able to marshal and manage recruitment these days?
It's tricky. Of course, they have this very sophisticated propaganda operation, and that still functions. And you have a combination of propaganda that's driven and generated from Iraq, from within their core zone, where they've still been able to stabilize their leadership. And also in collaboration with the international affiliates. So you see a huge amount of footage that's supplied by groups in West Africa or elsewhere, sort of showing operations and then attributing them to ISIL, calling them battles of attrition and things of that kind. So the propaganda is there, and there's a lot for people to read. And of course, there are a lot of potential customers, because you have people who are marginalized, in some cases, people who are, you know, I mean, there's no secret that ISIL has previously recruited people with mental difficulties as well. That can be part of it. But also there are a lot of people out there who are just susceptible to radicalization, and the propaganda is there and it's available. So people are seeing that, but then the question is, what are they doing about it? And this is where it's difficult, because of course they're no longer recruiting foreign terrorist fighters. They're not trying to get people to come to Iraq or Syria, because they've got no means to receive them or use them. And therefore it's more a sort of more generalized radicalization. I think this is an interesting point, and it's good that you mentioned Al-Qaeda in the question as well, because one of the questions is how far the boundaries between the two groups is becoming rather blurred. Because if you are sitting in Europe somewhere, or Southeast Asia, or wherever it might be, and you're susceptible to this propaganda, and you're looking to get together with like-minded people. Increasingly, it's less determined by whether you are a partisan of ISIL or a partisan of Al-Qaeda, and it may be more to do with finding a sympathetic community of extremists, and that may be linguistically based. It may be that you do that with people who are with whom you're ethnically related and where you have a common language. So I think we're going to see much more, if you like, sort of unbranded Takfiri or jihadi extremism, and whichever, you know, which group is stronger may depend on which one they gravitate to. So people will be more likely to join Al-Qaeda in some parts of the world and more likely to join ISIL in other parts of the world. But all of this carries with it, of course, the susceptibility to detection by counter-terrorist agencies, and to some extent to being countered also by the internet platforms. And it is true that there are a lot of counterterrorism successes. A lot of these people are getting involved in this extremist activity online, and they're being detected, and they're therefore being disrupted, and in the end they're not effective. And it's also interesting that Europol, working with the Telegram platform in particular, were able to take down a lot of extremist sites towards the end of last year.
Very last thing, given the major turmoil all over the world in every single country, virtually every country right now because of COVID-19, here in the U.S. because of the chaos over the election, in Europe because of the interference from Russia, and you know China's situation with Huawei, and there's so many geopolitical things that have distracted people. How is it possible to keep focused or keep people focused on the possibility that there could be another major attack from one of these terror groups? What's the recommendation for staying focused?
Yeah, and it's a really good point. I think, and also, you know, although the threat is reduced, as I said earlier, and indeed during COVID-19, a lot of the targets that these groups might attack are not appearing because you don't have crowded public venues, you don't have crowded public transport and things like that. That is not a reason for complacency. So part of this, I said, is a potential bottling up and release effect. There is a risk that as the world progressively normalizes from present restrictions, that also makes it easier for attacks to be mounted, and perhaps those attacks are already in the planning stages. So that's one of the things to bear in mind.
Edmund Fitton Brown is the coordinator of the UN's Al-Qaeda Taliban monitoring team. JJ Green, WTOP News.